Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we go. We are off and running for this 22nd day of August 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the multimedia madcap merry extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just run on by HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be part of, there's just, there's other chat rooms and stuff, but nothing quite like this one. No. You'll be greeted by Anatole, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Steve from Georgia, Stan, Will in Chicago, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, oh, stand by, has refrained from folding space, pending things cooling off in the man cave. It's going to take a minute. Stand by. I'm sorry. Complications. Anyway, this is a listener-supported radio network, and we try to raise $200 every evening, and that works out to 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and we're cheating on that by about a half of a, by about 5/100ths of a something, I don't know. Math is hard. Just to keep up with things, there is an offer on the table for those who would like to partake of it, of some wild rice. It's not a matter of selling the stuff or anything. It's just that I have access to some harvested in a thousand millennia old way. Beautiful manifestation of heritage of a delicious, delicious food item. And so $60, we'll be shipping out a pound, 2 for $100. So by all means, if you're interested, just A, PayPal the whichever amount, B, make sure I get a good, rock solid, valid mailing address, and it'll be going out in the next month or so. Okay? Okay, so there's that. All of it happens over at the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And, of course, if you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, is the Horn, see how it works, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV, 25801. Yes. There you have it. I mean, that's all the housekeeping going on as we wind our way toward the end of the month. I think there are, what? Yeah, there are 8 broadcast days left in August. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn, Bob. I appreciate it very, very much. Randy in PA letting me know loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Where's Brother Deacon Asa and his abacus or whatever? You'll have that. So it's been an interesting day in Mount Colby gone. Wider day. Oh wait, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Hold on here just a minute. Much better.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. More.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. Waste no time. A rolling stone gathers no gravy. Come on over here, just off the Carnival Midway, for the Moran Monday tent. You will not believe your ears when you step behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas to behold an array, a wonderwork of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, Morans, one and all, Repiglicans, Libertarians, an absolute cavalcade of Moranity. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morans, friends and neighbors. You just can't tell them much. For less than 17 cents per hour of programming for a $10 a month subscriber, well, golly gee, you get them all right here, right now, and each and every Monday on the horn. A quick warning to people entering the Moran Monday tent: keep a close hand on children, small dogs, kitty cats, purses, wallets, European-style messenger bags, and yes, even that iguana that you won out on the Midway, throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Wait, that's Wednesday. Yes, indeed, friends and neighbors, kitties and cousins, it is Moran Monday on the horn. Great God Almighty. And we, by Jove, how can I put this? I'm going to ditch the Carnival Barker voice now. It was 2 different days for me today. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I forgot that part. Damn it, Tim, you're falling down on the job. It was 2 different days for me today. And it was 2 different days that actually started yesterday. So yesterday was really fun. Ron from the far frozen north detoured into West Virginia for a little while, and we got together and sat down and chewed the fat for a little bit. Actually, there was no fat, but anyway, no, we hung out together, but we couldn't hang out too long because Ron had to hit the road, and I had to hit the road because, you see, I was scheduled for what's the official term for it? Contrasting tomography. I was scheduled for a CT scan today. And back on Friday, I got a call from a woman at the hospital who made the CT scanner machine make all its funny noises and make pictures of people's insides. And she told me that, you know, because there would be some contrast involved, that they needed to check my kidney function, and therefore they
needed to do some blood work. She said, but that's okay. You can come in Saturday or Sunday and do it. And that way it'll all be ready for us when you walk in on Monday. I said, great, I'll be there. So when Ron and I went our separate ways, and we didn't really, we were on the same, but never mind. I blazed on over to Somersville to get my blood work done. So I walked in there. There was nobody at the front desk. And there was a sign saying, please go to the ER registration desk if you need help. So, well, being a longtime reader of words, I did exactly that. And there were three or four people at the desk there, and I said hi and gave my name and told them what I was there for. And they said, you got an order? I said, no, it's already here. And I gave the young woman's name, and I said, she told me it would be waiting, and then I should just go and get the blood drawn, and blah, 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 blah. We don't know nothing about no blood work orders on it. Why don't you just come back tomorrow? I said, well, it certainly looks like that's going to be what I have to do. Okay. Goodbye now. Goodbye. And so there was a wasted trip to Somersville and back home. And then this morning, so I got there about 30 minutes early, extra. Walked in, sat down, did the registration boogie. And the woman just reaches over and picks a piece of paper up and says, yeah, here's your blood work order. And I went, wait a damn minute. Has that been sitting there all along? Oh, yeah, it was just in the stack of stuff for today. I said, you got to be kidding me. No, I mean, that's how it always is. I mean, and then I relayed my story. Well, they probably just didn't understand. Now, this was the registration desk at the emergency room that didn't understand. Hello, we've got a sucking chest wound. We don't know anything about those sucking chest wounds. Maybe come back tomorrow when somebody knows about sucking chest wounds is here. I was thinking I might title this segment opening the program as Adventures in the Greatest Healthcare System on Earth. But then I realized it would be wholly inappropriate and inaccurate to do that. I read somewhere not too awfully long back that the number three cause of death in the United States is not cancer. It is not heart disease. It is not Jergens myasthenia that causes the nose to mysteriously slide off. No. The number three cause of death in the United States is medical accidents, medical neglect, medical oopsies. So, anyway, I showed up today, this morning, early. And got all the registration done. Okay, well, you can go get your blood work now. And, you know, I just had a sense that things were going to be a little squirrely. Well, I'm looking at two pretty nifty bruises in either interior of my elbows. So I walked in. I'm happy. I'm not scared of needles or anything. And, you know, the young woman in her scrubs, I think, no, she wasn't even in scrubs. I'm thinking she was a trainee. It was trainee Monday at the hospital because one of the young women at the registration desk said, looked at the woman who was teaching her how to negotiate the intricacies of billing, said, yeah, he was here yesterday. I looked at her. I know you. And she kind of grinned, all sheepish like. But anyway, they finally sent me over to blood work, and I walked in, and the young amateur stabber said, "We're just going to get some blood for you." Okay, well, that's fine. It's not like the first time it's happened. Stuck my arm out. Said, you know, this vein over here is restaurant quality. And they were just chuckling that I said restaurant quality. And so they put that rubber band hickey on my arm to make the vein plump up real good like, and I made a fist a couple of times, and it was just sitting there just a throbbing, and just all, and then they got their rig out, and she stabbed me. Have you ever, you ever had to like build something at home, and maybe, you know, the first law of carpentry, as Boss Man Wayne once told me, is measure twice to cut once. But sometimes you measure twice, you measure three times, you measure four, and things don't work out just right. So you got that one piece of wood and you're trying to fit it into that space and you just kind of boop, 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 and you kind of bang on it, kind of get it to wedge in there. Well, that's what it was like with the needle this morning. My friendly amateur trainee blood drawer stabber got that needle up inside my left arm, and she popped that little test tube on there, and she said, "Why ain't no blood coming out? He ain't got no blood." And she said, "No, no," and the woman who was with her said, "No, just wiggle it around a little bit." And, you know, I don't faint at the sight of blood, and I was nowhere near fainting anyway, because there wasn't no blood to be seen. And so she wallered it around in there, pulled it out some, stuck it back in, wiggled it a little to the left, wiggled it a little to the right, kind of tipped it up and shoved it a little bit more. And finally, a little trickle of blood begun to come out. At which point, the woman with her said, "You know, I don't think this is just this. I just don't think." And so she stepped over and she commenced to wallering on the needle a little bit. And she wiggled it a little to the left, and she wiggled it a little to the right, and she pulled it out, backed it out some till I could just about see the hollow part of the needle, and then shoved it back in real good and tipped it up and pressed it down, pressed on the inside of my arm a little bit, and said, "Dang." And then she pulled it out. And they put the cotton ball and the tape over and said, "This is just not going to work." I said, I think I'm in complete agreement with you. So she said, "We'll try the other arm." It was Steve from Georgistan saying, "They probably rolled, missed your vein. Bob, in about a week, you're going to have a hell of a bruise." Oh, no, it's already starting up. It's right purple for a good inch and a half, 2 inches down from the vein. And she said, we're gonna try the other one." And she wasn't going to let the amateur trainee stabber do it this time. By God, she was going to do it her own self. So over to my right arm we went. And again, with the rubber tourniquet hickey and the rig and the alcohol prep swab and she takes to a jug of punch in the chat room says, "You know, when Mo was working as an RN, she was the one they turned to for sticking difficult veins." I don't have difficult veins. I've never had this happen to me in my life. But she just, you know, she stuck it, you know, the business end of that needle, and it looked like it was about the size of a garden hose. It gets in there. I mean, it'll pierce you pretty quick. It doesn't hurt particularly. So she got it in there and sticks the test tube on it. The vacuum the engages, you know, and it's supposed to, but it didn't. That arm didn't have any blood in it either. So she wallered it to the left, and she wallered it to the right, and she raised it up a little bit, and she pushed it down a little bit, and she pushed around on my arm some, and she pulled it out, and she pushed it back in, and wiggled it and jiggled it, and said, "I can't get any blood at all." At which point, finally, the one person in the lab who apparently knew what he was doing came in, said, "Give me that." And just kind of finagled a minute, and then the test tube filled up, and he said, "All done now." said, yay. Sorry about that. Okay. So then I'm walking out with cotton balls on the insides of both elbows. Two for the price of one. And I'm sitting there waiting for my CT. You know, we just can't let me out to go anywhere, or else I'll do radio about it. I sat there in the main waiting area, and a little bit later, a woman comes out with a bottle of stuff, and she says, drink this. And it was that sugar-free iodine ionic solution. She said, you got to drink all of it in about 15 minutes. I said, I'll do my best. She said, then I'll bring you another one. I said, well, goody. And that's, look, it's a hospital waiting area. I read things in Cosmopolitan that I didn't even want to know, and didn't know I didn't want to know until I knew them. There was some woman on the cover named Ashley Graham, and it said Ashley Graham on sex, religion, and what? Graham? Religion? Really? There's a member of the Graham family out there that's doing the covers of Cosmo now? Does Billy know? But it wasn't. It wasn't. No, these were the Grahams of Omaha, Nebraska. So I'm drinking that stuff down, and I look at the label. Because, you know, I'm a label reader. I wanted to make sure it didn't have any high fructose corn syrup in it. Because everything does. Exactly, Hoghead in the chat room pointing. Radioactive Kool-Aid. Tropical punch flavor, no less. A little salty. And I'm reading the label there, and I get to the bottom, and it says, brought to you by Beakley Pharmaceuticals. Okay, never heard of them before. Apparently they're somewhere in Connecticut. And then the company motto. It was an inspiring morning. Oh, Jesus, I tell you, it was an inspiring morning. The company motto, when your diagnosis must be right. And, you know, I'm just, over the course of my 213, yeah, that's right. Abraham Lincoln math is no easier than the real kind. I've become sensitive to marketing and to advertising. And when I saw that motto, I laughed out loud and everybody looked at me. I didn't really care given the way the morning was shaping up. I just looked, when your diagnosis must be right. What is there, another brand out there for when your diagnosis is just kind of who gives a fuck? I mean, is there a weekly pharmaceuticals company? Weekly pharmaceuticals, when you don't really give a damn about your diagnosis. I'm guessing when your diagnosis must be right probably justifies at least another 25% on top of the already inflated cost of this stuff. Yeah. And that's when little Chloe came in. And that was just kind of is going to lead into the other part of my 2 days in one. Little Chloe was precious. Little Chloe was about three. Little Chloe came in with her great Grammy and her grandma. And little Chloe did everything that came out of little Chloe's mouth came out at 125 decibels. It also turned out that Great Grammy was deaf as a post. And little Chloe, I presume her newborn sister was there too. The newborn was as good as gold. Little Chloe looked like she'd had, you know, a couple of Red Bulls before she got to the hospital. They were there for Great Grammy. Because she went everywhere. I think she's going to grow up and be the Flash, little Chloe. And when Grammy asked her not to do it, little Chloe just screamed. And then in an effort to get little Chloe to sort of settle down and focus, then she was as precious as the day is long. She had a little pink t-shirt on and some plaid shorts. She had a little pink t-shirt on and said, "I'm independent." But Grammy gave her a bag of pennies to calm her down. So now you count Grammy's pennies for her. You know, by the time Chloe grows up, they may be the gender barrier may have finally been broken in Major League Baseball. And little Chloe may have the best fastball since Walter Johnson. Because she could move them pennies. Yeah. So then they brought me out my other bottle of contrast chaser. Told me to drink half of that. Which I then proceeded to do. You can't just chug that stuff. And again, it was from Beakley Pharmaceuticals, when your diagnosis must be right. yes, Ron. Ron in the far... Well, Ron temporarily removed from the far frozen north. Focus! Focus! What were we talking about? So they finally... They came and got great-grandma. And, you know, Mama was not there, and neither was Daddy. And when you see a situation like that in West Virginia, you just know things probably aren't good. Because that means Mama and Daddy are both working, or Mama or Daddy is out of the picture, or Mama and Daddy are both out of the picture, and two elderly women are trying to raise a three-year-old and a newborn. But they came to get great-grandma, and Chloe set up a wail. Oh, my God. The screaming. But then she went back to throwing pennies. You know, if they move her to Philadelphia, she could be a great Phillies fan if you just give her some batteries. Then they came to get me. Well, not immediately, because I got to... Chloe then ran all over the hospital for a while. Ran down into the wards and everything. And came back. And at one point, Granny said, "Let's go get you a pop." And I'm thinking, no, no, really, no. Not the Mountain Dew. But then Great Grammy came back, and little Chloe screamed, "Peggy!" and ran to her as though they had been separated for 15 years. It was about the sweetest thing I ever saw. It was beautiful. And then they came and got me. So I went back to the contrasting tomography room, sat down, went over the list, and what medications do you take and everything, and are you a diabetic? And I said, well, it's nothing I'm proud of, but, I mean, not really, but she said, but do you take medicine? I told her, absolutely, and I took the time-released kind. Every morning. She said, hmm. I said, hmm. Don't like the sound of that, hmm. She said, well, it's okay, it's okay. We'll just go ahead. I said, what do you mean we'll just go ahead and it's okay? She said, well, I mean, it's okay. I mean, just don't take it for 2 days after you've had this IV contrast. I said, and why? She said, well, it can dehydrate you really bad. I said, how bad? She said, till you die. I said, did I mention that it was time-released and I'd taken it this morning? She said, we've never had anybody on the time-released kind before, the extended release. I said, well, I'm just wondering if that's the case, if maybe we should be doing this. And she said, you know, that's a good question. She said, you know, I'm going to call the pharmacy and see if it's okay to give you this IV contrast. And I understand, I wasn't mean. Ask anybody. I am a charming, pleasant person to be around. Full of laughs. But at this point, I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, there is way too much uncertainty and way too little hard, concrete knowledge for my liking. And so after a conversation that involved a whole bunch of uh-huhs and nuh-uhs and ums, she came back and said, you know, just to be on the safe side, which is one of those phrases that maybe it should be part of their mission statement. We will always try to be on the safe side with your health, well-being, and continued ability to be a living entity upon this planet. Just to be on the safe side, we're going to reschedule your CT. And at that point in time, I was not angry. I said, is the blood work still going to be okay through, like, whenever? And she said, it's good for 30 days. I said, glory. I said, that'll give the two holes in my arms a chance to heal up so you can get at them a little easier. She said, cool. Exactly, Carol Baker. For when your diagnosis absolutely will kill you. meanwhile, email coming from... I got my first email from him over the weekend. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. He signed off his email as Barbecue Todd, Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Simple email, three letters in the subject line, OMG, then all caps. That shit is fucked up. Oh, you're telling me. So, you know, I dodged a grisly death by interior desiccation and the deliberate burning out of my kidneys by, like, maybe one question. Meanwhile, Jug of Punch in the chat room says, Mo is all Jesus Christ, Puck! And my hand to God, every word of this is true. I am not elaborating or embroidering. I mean, I'm not even cross-stitching. So I got on out of there. And I felt like, you know, with my life, and along the way, they said, now, you've got a follow-up appointment with your doctor. on Wednesday. I said, isn't that the same day that we have scheduled the CT and rescheduled the CT? She said it is. I said, wouldn't it make sense then to move that appointment? She said, yeah, it would. I said, because they wouldn't have the results, would they? No, they wouldn't. And it wouldn't mean much to the doctor to have a follow-up appointment for something that he didn't have the results of. You're right. And I promise, I'm not a bastard patient. I'm not. I'm nice. I ask questions, because if you don't ask questions, in the American healthcare system, you can get dead in a real damned hurry. So now, Wednesday, I get to get up and do it all over again. Well, I mean, we don't have to do the blood work. But, you know, I don't take the metformin for the next 2 days. And hopefully the extended release will be out of my system. And then I don't take it for the next 2 days after that. Which means that I think I'm going to be living on air so as to keep my blood sugar from running for the stratosphere. I may not, and that's one of those few things on earth that will make me a cranky person. Hungry. Yeah. So that was one of my days. But the other day that is today, well, I'm making a formal proposal. I propose that the 22nd day of August of every year hereafter, and we'll probably need an act of Congress, but I think this is one of those things the Congress can act on, because both sides will have a reason for voting in favor of it. I propose that henceforward, every August 22nd, wait a minute, do we need to make this a Monday holiday? Wait, this is Monday. Well, it won't always be. So every Monday appearing nearest August the 22nd, be henceforth declared Bill Clinton Day. Why? Because August the 22nd, and this particular August the 22nd, 2016, is the 20th anniversary of the day that Bill Clinton fucked poor people harder than he ever fucked any of the women he had flings with. This is the 20th anniversary of the era of big government is over. This is the 20th anniversary of welfare reform. And what a reform, this being Morin Monday and all, what a reform it has been. You know, one of the central tenets of Bill Clinton's welfare reform was that it turned desperately needed welfare payments, cash money, into one of those darlings of the right wing, block grants to the states. But they didn't just say, here we're going to do block grants to the states, so, you know, Alabama will get a few million, and West Virginia will get 79 cents, and no. They said, we're going to give you your block grant money, and then
Y'all can do with it anything you want to, including up to and including not letting any poor people have it. So not only did it put a 5-year lifetime cap on the receipt of what is referred to as temporary aid to needy families, the federal government, thanks, Bill. No, really, you've done enough. The federal government said, you know, it doesn't even have to be 5 years. You can make it one. You can do pretty much anything you want to. Want to buy cop cars with it? Go ahead. We'll say you're serving underserved neighborhoods. Now, I don't know about the cop cars. I'm probably making that up. But it has been a 20-year brutalizing of the poor. The editorial, the gang in the editorial board over to the Washington Post put it this way.
Monday marks the 20th anniversary of the great domestic policy innovation of the Clinton administration, welfare reform. The federal cash assistance program for the poor was converted from an open-ended benefit to a time-limited one, conditioned on work effort, paid for by fixed federal grants to the states plus state dollars. Born amid fierce ideological controversy.
Well, not really. I mean, Bill Clinton was for it, and the Congress was for it, and there were a few poor people out there going, you know, we're probably going to starve, but they didn't really get a vote.
Born amid fierce ideological controversy, welfare reform has grown to maturity. Really, boys, put down the pipe. Amid equally intense scrutiny with both supporters and critics mining the data for validation.
So and we see in the setup of that first paragraph that we're going to get a big bullshit dose of both sides do it.
It is not surprising, therefore, that think tanks and academics marked the landmark legislation's birthday with more studies supporting their points. The Liberal Center on Budget and Policy Priorities produced a report noting that the share of poor children living in deep poverty grew in the wake of welfare reform.
Well, damn it! It wasn't supposed to be that way. They were supposed to die!
Scott Winship of the conservative Manhattan Institute countered, why doesn't the Liberal Center on Budget and Policy Priorities have a name? But Scott Winship, by God, he's going to get some fucking notice in the Washington Post, by Jesus, of the conservative Manhattan Institute countered, arguing that conventional measures of poverty may, for various technical reasons, understate welfare reform's positive impact.
You got that? The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. That's what they were. Yeah. They said, wow, a lot more poor children have stayed poor children and become poor children thanks to you, Bill Clinton, and you, Newt Gingrich, and you, Republican Congress. And the conservative Manhattan Institute and Scott Winship has said,
well, like, so what if they've got numbers saying there's more poor kids? Those are traditional methods of measuring the poors, and there's probably some good things about it. It's just that we don't have any way to measure how good it is for little children to go hungry.
That's what it says. And my God, when you find out what the Confederacy does with its money, I was listening to a, because I was driving all over the place this morning, I was listening to a report on National Petroleum Radio about this very topic. And they decided to focus on Louisiana Stan. And in Louisiana Stan, only $9 out of every 100 actually goes in the form of cash money to any poor people. In Louisiana Stan, a state with a whole passel of poor people, only 6,000 citizens of that state, editorial note to National Petroleum Radio, they are not fucking residents, they are citizens. No, really, they said residents of Louisiana. Well, you know, they're the poors. I mean, we don't want to be running around making them feel all uppity like, you know, they've got a say-so in this whole popular sovereignty thing. Jesus. But that's real. It's something between $89 and $91 of temporary assistance to needy families monies that are block granted to Louisiana are spent on something besides poor people. Like maybe they'll prop up their Head Start program. Mm-hmm. And you had interviews with people saying, one woman who said, well, I've been homeless a lot, but right now I'm babysitting in exchange for food. Because it ain't worth it to me to try to jump through all the hoops just to get $180 a month. Because if I did that, I'd have to go 2 days a week to a class on how to find a job. And then I'd have to spend the rest of the week trying to find a job that I won't get. What a beautiful way to steal from the poor. Jim points out, did you ever read the Clinton election pamphlet, Reinventing Government? All this info was included, for real. Yeah, he told the world he was going to be the best Republican president this country had ever seen if we would just let him do it with a D behind his name so he could destroy the Democratic Party in the process. So the bottom line with welfare reform, the era of big government is over. The bottom line with welfare reform is that we are far worse off than we were 20 years ago. And by we, I mean all of us, the whole country. Because when you make life harder for poor people, it will eventually filter up. There was mention in the National Petroleum Radio story about how one of these poor little boys, one of the children of one of the women, is growing up in poverty. And there was a certain surprise to it in the voice of the for-profit media reporter. And it was a surprise that was not warranted. You know, we love, right-wingers especially, love those pulled up by their own bootstrap stories. Of course, we now know that a child that does not have adequate access to decent food
is going to be hard-pressed to learn enough, to learn sufficiently, to pull himself or herself up by those bootstraps. And by God, we won't be giving the kid any boots either. Bill Clinton ushered in some of the ugliest aspects of our modern life, and there's no getting around it. And what it will mean for us further years down the road is hard to say, at least with specificity. What we do know we can say is that it probably won't be good. Because, as noted, in the 20 years since the era of big government is over, we have more desperately poor than we would otherwise have had if a decent little program was just left the hell alone. But it couldn't be left the hell alone because Bill Clinton and the Republican Congress felt like them poors was he getting away with something. No meaningful access to child care for the mamas that they want to go out and go to job-finding classes and then go out and find a substandard job. We're just going to give them the dignity of work. Well, white guys, let me explain something to you. Being a mommy is work. Hard work. And there is tremendous dignity in it. And remember, all of this was done to poor mothers and fathers at a time when the Republican Party could not open its collective gob without singing the praises of family values. You know, as long as they weren't those families. Because they need to be out there working. And the kids can just, you know, fend for themselves. Because when the kids fend for themselves, it makes it much easier in a short period of time, because this had also been put in place by Bill Clinton, to usher the children into the prison industrial complex. See how it works? Neat, huh? Yeah. So, like I said, it was 2 days in one for me. It was CT Day. And it was Bill Clinton Day. And I think about all those Democrats in all those Confederate states that went to the polls to vote for Hillary because they knew her. Yeah. And this country, you know, those numbers about Louisiana were not just Louisiana. I'm sure something similar happens all over the Confederacy. We had the story a year, 2 years ago, it all runs together after a while for me, of the woman who ran the welfare program in Georgia. And she used to put zero, you know, they got like a chocolate nougat inside, but they're coated in like white chocolate or ganache or whatever. She would put zero candy bars on the desks of all the social workers in charge of filling out paperwork for poor, struggling people fighting to stay alive. And the purpose of those zero candy bars in Georgia was to remind the social workers that they were to grant zero welfare benefits. National Petroleum Radio also included a report on how Oregon handles its welfare. Which, mind you, is still limited by the 5-year lifetime cap. I mean, if you can't get a kid up to where he or she can go out and get a damn job at age 5, well, you're not trying. You're just a layabout. And why are you staying at home taking care of your children when you need to be out in the capitalist wonderland working for minimum wage? No health care. But Oregon apparently handles their approach to welfare with, again, inside the parameters, inside the hateful parameters of the bill as it was passed into law, much more humanity than does Louisiana. But it's still a curse. And a blight upon our nation. The Washington Post in its editorial continued, more to the point, 20 years is a long time for any policy to remain on the books without structural revision. Welfare reform is no exception, especially given its necessary link via the work requirement to the fast-changing U.S. labor market. By God, we've always got to tie it to the labor market, don't we? Well, there you go. Dogman in the chat room says, but if they like people to work, why does the Republican House have such a slow work schedule and perks like discounted drinks, discounted haircuts, and discounted food? And, of course, we must not forget that health care. Well, because that's for them, Dogman. That's not for the proles. They're special. The 2 and at most 3 days a week Republican Congress. Yeah. Anyway, fast-changing U.S. labor market. Congress, however, has failed to pass a comprehensive authorization since 2010. It's been making do with a series of temporary extensions. Meanwhile, total federal funding has been frozen at $16.5 billion per year since 1996. 20 years, same amount of money, no change. More people. No more money. States continue to game the block grant mechanism, using money for programs well outside the law's core purposes, helping the poor get work and providing cash assistance until they do. Some states are squeezing benefit levels and shortening lifetime eligibility periods to as little as 1 year in Arizona, Stan. The Washington Post closes saying, it seems that every year Washington greets welfare reform's anniversary the same way, by arguing about it. This time Congress ought to celebrate with less talk and more action. Well, Washington Post, maybe it would help if you didn't start your goddamned editorials by playing the both sides do it game. Well, the liberals say there's more poor people, but the right-wing Manhattan Institute says that
It's good for poor people to go hungry. It provides incentive and motivation and not some sort of welfare hammock. Fuck off. So that's just the beginning of Moran Monday. Only the beginning. Nice little crowd has gathered along in the chat room since I first mentioned it. Dogman and Hoghead and Jug of Punch, Labor Man, Mighty Mouse, Sentient Being, Snork, Soapbox Geezer, Steve from Georgia Stan, VT Blom, Will in Chicago, and Anatole are all in there. Yeah. Wander on by if you can cope with Java. Meanwhile, I'll open up the lines for your nominations for this Moran Monday. And then, of course, well, in my father's house are many Morans. So, if you don't want to call, I'll keep filibobstering. But we will take a little break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Try to raise $200 every evening, and the wild rice offer is on the table for a very little time longer, because I want to go ahead and get the order out, and so that hopefully I can get it on the way to people as soon as possible. It all happens over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. Little break. And then we'll be back at it. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
One, two.
Nope, wrong one. There it is.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Make three, but one ain't here. Still chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels, but that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Welfare music, watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Baby dance circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? Baby dance to the world.
You know, that is the perfect bumper for a segment such as what we just had. Bottle Rockets and Welfare Music. As Hoghead points out, they're from Festus, Missouri, south of St. Louis. All right, so enough shilly-shallying about. With almost perfect timing, we'll run over to the stress line where I suspect Jim is calling from Louisiana Stan. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, that's right, Bob. Man, I heard you talking, and my ears were burning. I just ended up listening to the radio, and, you know, it's all true, man. That welfare reform and crap, that was just big bamboozle. It's criminal, dude. It's criminal. That's another reason.
You know, when I get all the way down to the ground with it, Jim, I come away saying, you know, it's hateful. It's hateful. It was a hateful piece of legislation signed by a hateful man.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, slavery's a hateful thing, but people, I'm sure there's a significant segment of the population, I would think, have no problem reinstating slavery on some sort of parameters. I mean, you know, I mean, basically, they've kind of...
Well, look at the labor laws in the Confederacy states. I'm not trying to oversimplify, but they took bond slavery and turned it into wage indebtedness.
Yeah. Right to work for less, no unions. I mean, just you can't even talk about it. I mean, I don't even know if it, I guess there's a couple of unions in the South. I know there are, but I mean, people, and I know unions are not totally good. They've done some screw-ups, but compared to what corporations do to workers, people are clueless that they think, I would rather deal with a union than a corporation any day of the week. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And look at the non-union shops. The governors in the Confederacy will do anything. Anything. They will abase themselves, embarrass themselves, to get a new car plant down there. And they're all non-union shops, and look what the pay scales are. They are abysmal. And yet people line up around the block for them, Jim, because they are the best jobs in the state. And compared to a union auto worker, those jobs suck.
Well, they're not so much anymore, because as I remember, we're hearing a while back, but when GM started buying out all the old, not just GM, but Detroit started buying out all the old worker contracts, and then they brought on the new people, you know, the new generation. They were starting off at like $14 an hour and probably a cutback in benefits. I don't know about that, but I don't see them giving anything they don't have to give. You know, basically the message, the drumbeat is, you're lucky to have a job, motherfucker, you know?
Yeah, and don't lift your head up and don't get uppity or you won't.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's still better than most jobs and stuff. I mean, you mean the thing, you kind of touched on this, but I think a big thing that's been going around, and I've noticed it, I'm on disability now, but one of the big things to push me over was I was over 50, and all of a sudden nobody wants to hire you over 50, or at least not full-time.
No, and in point of fact, long, long ago when I had occasion to actually read it and research it, you become an older worker at 47.
I kind of felt that. Yeah.
And for some reason, it was all based on statistical research and everything. At the age of 47, your likelihood of finding a good, long-term, good-paying job begin a headlong rush towards zero.
And even if you plan things out right, all it takes is one little mishap or one little miscalculation, you know, to go wrong. And
And it all falls apart.
Yeah, and people don't seem to think that. People don't, you know, it's like when I was 9, I never thought I'd have a brain aneurysm, but I did at 10. And then I thought I was free of brain aneurysms. Then I had another one at 12. Yeah, that's over 40 years ago. I'm still rolling around, but things happen you don't expect. I didn't even know what they were. But shit happens, you know?
Right, and you know what? If shit does happen, capitalism doesn't give a good old-fashioned damn, Jim.
Well, it's God's will. It's basically you get into Calvinism. We kind of touch on that periodically. It's almost scary the way that Calvinism always rears its ugly head for the world to do.
Neo-Calvinism provides a mechanism whereby the wealth class can excuse themselves from the rest of Christianity's teachings about being decent to the poor by saying, no, God made them poor because, you know, they're not very good people.
Yeah. Well, see, at least with Buddhism and Hinduism and all the reincarnation religions, you could always argue, well, they were assholes in their previous life. They were fucking real pricks in their previous life. So that's why they're getting treated bad this time. But in the Jesus Christ Calvinism song and dance, you've never been born before. You're in this life. You only get one chance. And this is a shitty hand you get. You know, if you're a person of dark skin, you know, dark pigment, or just one drop of blood was your rule in a Confederacy.
Well, and the post-Confederacy, yes.
You know, and hell, there's still... And that's... God, I hate the goddamn Democratic Party right now, you know?
I'm not real happy about it, okay? I mean, I've got in the stack here, and since you sort of opened the door on it, we'll talk about it. In the stack here, I've got a Politico story about the Democratic nominee for governor in almost level West by Coal, Virginia, Stan. A coal billionaire who was born on third thinking he hit a triple by the name of Jim Justice. You remember Jim. Jim Kunta Kinte Justice that we've talked about?
Right.
The guy who said God made him Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte for a reason? So that he could share his wealth and make people's life better?
Yeah.
Well, Jim Justice has announced, and this is a quote, "I cannot be a supporter of Hillary Clinton. The reason I can't be is her position on coal is diametrically completely wrong in many, many different ways." It's a hillbilly version of Trump speak.
You know, I've kind of reached a point. I just turned 57 a couple weeks ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I kind of reached a point where fucking let it burn. Just burn the fucking planet down. Just fuck it up as fast as you can.
I understand that, Jim. I understand that impulse, but I can't go there. I have to work to keep from going there.
I know. You have three kids. That's one of the great things.
Well, No, it's not even the kids and grandkids. It's that there are so many tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people who have done nothing to deserve to have it burned down around them. Hell, most of them won't even go vote.
I know, but I've reached a point where I don't care anymore. I'm like Joey Ramone. I don't care. I'm so fed up with it. And then you try and talk to them, and they are so fucking clueless for whatever reason. And I know I'm sounding arrogant. I'm polluting, and I'll plead guilty to
both. Well, I'm not. I mean, I'm not beating up on you, Jim. Damn. I mean, come on.
No. I'm just defending myself, you know, for the hell of it. But no. I've seen it. Okay, and granted, this is my Jimmy view of the world. Unfortunately, it fits pretty real. I mean, things I see happening don't really surprise me as much. I mean, I suspended reality in hopes somehow Bernie had a chance. Although, in my inner garrison core, I knew he didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. The system was not going to let it happen. Just like now, I'm going with Jill. Don't care. I know she didn't. I know even if she has a chance, they will. It will not happen. It will be stolen as it was.
Right. I mean, you're supporting Jill with the full understanding that she does not have a snowball's chance in hell in a frozen over hell.
Even if she does, they will fucking steal it. They, just like they did with Bernie. That's just the way the system is. You do not, or you end up like Bobby Kennedy in L.A. Okay, that's my understanding. I'm a little bit pissed off with the way things are. I shouldn't be. Sound of the gunfire, I should be used to it now. You know, a little talking heads for refrain. But now, you know that, Bob. I mean, I was thinking, oh, man, somehow Bernie will get through it. And he fought a good fight. But, I mean, 14 states with total whacked out voter fraud and contempt. And the news media kind of played it off like, oh, la-di-da, this is, you know, I mean...
Well, yeah, and I mean, I understand, Jim, because, you know, when you say just, you know, let it burn, like I said, I understand the impulse, and frankly, you know, bless her heart, Jill Stein has the same idea, because, among other things, she has said that we have to immediately end all pumping of hydrocarbons. And from an intellectual standpoint, that's true.
Yeah,
and we need to get where we're going a whole lot quicker. But if you turned off the gasoline pumps and the heating oil pumps and the natural gas tomorrow, do you have any? I mean, how many millions of people would die? Because it would be measured in millions, Jim. Dead.
Yeah, well, what you could do is kind of have a compromise. You could kind of work instead of... It's not a zero-sum game, I don't think. It's not... It doesn't... I think Jill Stein's using that for dramatic pause, and I'm really not into the campaign. I'm not a spokesman or anything. I follow a couple of sites, and I tweet here and there, and I call up your show and call up Bob's show.
Mike's
about
yeah.
to, I'm living on the edge. I'm a true radical.
Well, let me. But, I mean, since I was talking about particularly the facts about Louisiana that were brought out in the National Petroleum Radio Report, Jim. Help me here if you don't mind.
Sure.
I've been to Louisiana a few times, and you know I know what it looks. I know what the Deep South looks like in the part of Alabama where I grew up, and other parts of Alabama. But in a state with as many desperate, struggling poor people as Louisiana, how do the well-to-do and the okay manage to just live these insulated lives where they never even have to consider poverty or desperation? And that's a hard question to ask just barely a couple of weeks after poor Tony Norman, yes, Mother Bates Perkins, got his McMansion flooded.
Well, I think God was sending a message, build bigger, higher mansions, I guess is the message. But I don't know. It's like I was surprised at the low, maybe there was voter fraud for that, although why, but in the Democratic primary, I think Hillary got 70, a high 70% versus Bernie. Bernie's 20-something, and I found that, you know, I don't know. I can't explain that. But
I can explain that.
Fraud, yeah.
No, not fraud. They look, it's real. People knew Hillary. She's been working on this since 2008. And that's why the Confederacy got front loaded.
I know, I know Hillary, but I can't stand the woman more and more. You know, I got to almost stay away from the computer just so I just don't start flipping out on Hillary.
I understand.
I could not vote for her if I had to. I've only missed one time. I missed the 96 election because I came back from Seattle and I didn't register in time. Every other time I voted, so I will vote. I will vote Green Party. And my vote doesn't matter anyway. There was like you said, the front loading of the Confederacy vote. You know, and it's so, you know, it's interesting. I find people like you, me, Malloy, one of the ones that referred to the South as the Confederacy. You know, quote unquote, the esteemed commentators never would.
Well, no, that wouldn't be objective now, would it? Right. Yeah.
I guess you're right, Bob. Damn it, there you go. You know, that lawyer-like logic.
Brutal. It's brutal, I tell you. Brutal. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, and I really did appreciate the phone call because, you know, I live my reality, but I can't speak to anybody else's.
That's mine. I mean, I'm just putting it out there that that's where I'm at, and even if I wanted to vote for Hillary, it ain't gonna mean shit to a tree. Quote, great, that's a crazy Slick Jefferson airplane quote. Eskimo Blue Day, check it out.
No, that's the case where you are and where I am.
Yeah,
in point of fact, I don't know. She'll probably draw 35% of the vote here. If by some miracle, I don't know. Maybe if Trump came out and said, well, I don't guess there's anything. No, he couldn't do anything to lose West Virginia because, well, we're just hell-bent, Jim, on, you know, flunking our IQ test and getting held back in the sixth grade for four more years.
Well, you got that big coal business coming back in a couple of years, I hear.
Yeah, except it's not.
That's really going to be booming in a couple of years.
Just
like oil is going to be king forever in Louisiana, I understand. Good thing we're thinking ahead, right?
Yeah, damn straight. Absolutely.
All right, check you later, Bob.
All right, see you, Jim. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Jim from Louisiana, Stan. 24 minutes past the hour. And let's roll from one L.A., to another, where I suspect we have Tracy, the lady cab driver. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I think we need to give Brother Jim some Prozac.
It's hard. It's hard.
I understand.
At the world from where he is. And not, shit, you don't have to burn it down. You can just sit around and watch climate change catch up. For a couple of weeks, Tracy, Louisiana looked like Louisiana's gonna look forever in about 50 years or so.
Exactly. I mean, I just so happened. I think I told you. I felt all grown up. I got my first. I subscribed for the first time to Mother Jones magazine. I feel so grown up and you know progressive now. And they had an article about, you know, Louisiana, about, you know, how low, you know, the rate of poverty. And, you know, basically, if I can remember the article, because I'm telling you, I read stuff now, and it's like, wow, did I just read that? But the gist of the of the article was about all these people voting for Trump and why. And the premise is, or was, is that he's a new kind of Republican. Because, you know, the real Republican, you know, you don't get on welfare. You don't get any kind of government assistance because, you know, that's for the shirkers and those people that don't understand about pulling themselves up by their bootstraps.
You're right, yeah.
But, you know, but the new Republican, as far as, you know, it's like Trump is giving them a reason, saying, well, you know, this is what the government is for. And like you said, you can use these benefits as long as it's a certain type of people. But if you're brown or you're Muslim or if you, you know, maybe gay or lesbian or what have you, you can't use those benefits. It's only for us, you know, because, you know, it's our fault.
And that that's at the bottom of it all, Tracy. If it was just poor white folks collecting welfare, we would be giving it out in handfuls.
In droves.
We probably still have government cheese.
Oh, God, I miss the government cheese and peanut butter. Man.
Yeah, we've been there. We've been there. Yep.
Had that conversation. But, it's like why we don't have Medicare for everybody. Wasn't it at one point supposed to roll out incrementally as, you know, eventually health care for the entire country? But, oh, damn, those brown folks, we can't give it to them, so we can't, no one can, you know, they did their damnedest to make sure no one gets it now. Because, you know, brown people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had a note from Robert in Australia, okay? He said, why aren't all your schools and hospitals federally funded? Wouldn't it solve a lot of your current issues? Shouldn't all the public schools in the U.S. get funded approximately the same amount of money? And mm-hmm. you know, and yes, it would solve problems, and yes. But the thing is, we've got 50 petty kingdoms here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got 50 different ways of engaging in legal legerdemain to make sure that only the right schools get the money. And that only
and the right neighborhood.
Right. And some hospitals that have high charity loads, you know, they just go begging or get closed. I mean, I'm sure, I know it's happened in New York. I'm sure it's happened in Chicago, L.A., you know, everywhere.
Everywhere. And like you said, it would just, but you have, what did she call them, kingdoms? I call them fiefdoms.
Yeah, same, yeah.
You know, it's just, I, by virtue, you know, I'm fortunate I moved to Sherman Oaks. And then, Sherman Oaks and now Encino. So, just so happens, just in my, you know, within a 5-mile radius, there's 3 hospitals. There's 20 grocery stores. There's, you know, the schools that are on, you know, the top.
Yeah, you're living in the halfway decent America.
Yes.
But you don't have to go far in L.A. to find places that ain't that way.
No, I don't even have to go far in the valley, huh? I could just go down this, you know, when I lived in Sherman Oaks, I just have to go maybe a few miles north. Now that I'm in Encino, I got to go a little further north to hit those neighborhoods because, you know, geography. But like you said, these people who live these insulary lives where they... how they can do the blinders, but then these are the descendants of the same people who ignored slavery and segregation. You know, that cognitive dissonance where you justify everything that's going around you, knowing full well that it's wrong, but you live out your life anyway.
Yeah.
Because, it doesn't affect you, but yes, it does. Because, see, you still have to live in this country. And those barriers and those, you know, those geographic boundaries that, you know, that good job, you went to college and got that good job, and that good job is no longer there, or you get to that, or that job that you had, and because of how old you are, you are no longer, as you said, viable. So even if you lose that good job that you've had all these years, and then you try to, I don't know, become a still earning person in this country, good luck with that, homie. And because you and I are not that far apart age-wise.
No, no. And the thing is, there's never a moment in anybody's life in the United States where at some point in time we're not participating in some scheme of oppression, repression, murder for hire, exploitation. Pick one. From the little massively powerful computers in our pockets. To the food we eat. Hey, oh my God, Tracy, I don't know if you saw this. This is kind of important because, you know, we are foodies. So don't be ordering any scallops for a while.
Oh, God, no. Why?
Because there's a recall.
On scallops?
You got to go to the FDA to read it all, but... So there's this company in Hawaii that processes and packages raw scallops, but they don't send them to the grocery stores. They sell them wholesale to restaurants, institutions, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So like when you order your scallops a la peasant under glass.
Well, actually, I was going to go to we're going to dinner after Will's practice tonight and to an Italian restaurant, and I was thinking scallops risotto, but
no, not unless you can make sure where they come from. Because it turns out that people have been getting hepatitis A from these scallops.
What?
And if you drill down... If you drill down, you find out. Let me see if I got the story here real quick. Agnes did this to me, so you can blame my lovely bride.
Is that like a thanks, Obama?
Yeah, that is. Let's see. This won't take but a minute. Okay, I'm getting there. Because it's only fair to, like, give you the company. Scroll. Oh, there they are. Yeah, scallops recalled after hundreds of people contract hepatitis A.
Not one, not two.
No, that would be hundreds. Seaport product. Okay, so seriously, everybody on the West Coast, because this is a West Coast thing. Seaport Products Corp. is voluntarily recalling a batch of its scallops after at least 206 people became sick with hepatitis A, prompting investigation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And they're both assisting the Hawaii Department of Health, which reported it on August the 17th. Of those who contracted hepatitis A, 51 were hospitalized. All cases involve adults. If a person has a weak immune system, it can cause liver failure and death. And here's the part. Here's the part that just made me go, well, damn. Because this is the part where you know that capitalism has been involved. Okay? Because, I mean, you know, scallops, right? They've got, that's the shell that looks like the Shell gas station shell, right?
Yes.
And let's say you're a scallop fisherman. Or let's say you're a caveman or some sort of early human, and you figured out that it's worth your time and trouble to jump in the water and go down there and collect a bunch of those funny looking things and bring them up because you saw the otters doing it, and you slip your stone knife in and you pop it open, and they are yummy and sweet and delicious even when they're raw. Okay, are we good there?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so these aren't raw scallops. This is even when they're cooked. So, you don't usually get hepatitis A that way, Tracy.
No.
People, and this is a CNN story, It's 7:35, which means that it is coming right up on supper time out where you are. Sorry, folks.
Mm-hmm.
People typically get hepatitis A after eating food that has been contaminated with fecal matter from a person who has the infection. Symptoms can show up in 15 to 50 days. You got that? You got to have somebody who has hepatitis A shit on the scallops in order for you to get hepatitis A from the scallops.
So.
Now our early human, our caveman, if you will, did not jump in the water, brave the shark infested, you know, whatever, go down, gather the scallops, come up and take a dump on them, and then eat them. That's what happens with capitalism. That's what happens when you've got somebody with hepatitis A who's working in your factory, is probably underpaid, overworked, and gets like...
No bathroom break.
And when they get a bathroom break, it's probably like, you know, 1.7 seconds long. And so they go and they wipey wipe and they don't washy wash because money, because capitalism, because the shareholders have to have a nice, tidy quarterly profit. So 205 people get hepatitis A and 51 wind up in the hospital.
So because, you know, the bean counters do the numbers. Don't they have people that, you know, well, how much profit can we make? And let's see, and with the least amount of bathroom breaks, and what's the reasonable loss or whatever when they get the lawsuits?
Yeah. Are you talking about the acceptable losses or? Cost benefit analysis.
Yeah, when they do the cost benefit analysis, and they're like, okay. Let's see. So if we allow them a bathroom break and we tell them you have like 2 minutes, that doesn't include them washing their hands. So, you know, so they could be back on the line so they could, you know, make more money.
Yeah.
Tracy,
there are so many details inside this story that just kind of make your hair stand on end and catch fire, spontaneously combust. One, the company voluntarily recalled the scallops, but they only did so after the CDC and the FDA told them that they had hepatitis shit on them. All right. They did not do it. You know, they didn't test it. They didn't find it out. Those big job killing government regulators found it out.
And when you said, you know, the CDC, FDA and all that. Now, imagine a world. Like you said, those job-killing regulators, you know, because those people who don't want us to have regulations, could you imagine how many more people would die in a Republican-run world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's this other sentence in the story, Tracy.
But wait, there's more.
Yes, absolutely. The FDA suggests customers who would like to eat scallops in the states where the recall is in effect should ask the restaurant where the scallops came from. How about instead the restaurants make sure that they don't have any shit-covered scallops? I mean, that's the ultimate buyer beware. I understand. You know, pardon me. Do your scallops come from Seaport in Hawaii? And they were produced in November 2015, and that's how long they've been in circulation. That's why there's 205 people with hepatitis A getting their livers burned up.
November 2015. So that means they have been frozen. Oh, God.
And the freezing doesn't kill it. And, you know, if you overcook a scallop, it's just nasty.
It's just rubber. You know, it's so funny.
And it's not like people got this in sushi bars, okay?
Well, and that kills me because I kid you not, I was in Lakewood, Long Beach yesterday. Will had a pool party and there was a sushi bar Thai restaurant. And I was going to have, you know, some sushi and some Thai food, just, you know, a little bit of both. But the sushi bar was closed until 5 o'clock. And, yes, that was a good discount. So, you know, talk about divine intervention for me.
Oh, my. I just went to the corporation's website.
Oh, no.
For our environment, for sustainability, for our health. Go blue! Go Blue is Seaport's totally immersive pro seafood initiative. It represents our commitment to supplying products that are sustainable and socially responsible. Go Blue also embodies our strong belief that fish and shellfish deserve to be known as the world's most nutritious and enjoyable foods when they aren't covered in human excrement and passing along hepatitis A. No, I added that last part.
No, why?
No, you know, I think when you've got a hepatitis A outbreak, maybe you just hang that under construction banner there on your website for a few days, because all of this rings kind of hollow.
Oh, geez.
Our corporate brochure. Mm. This is going to be fun.
I think you might need to leave a comment on their webpage. Just say, yo, homie.
Three decades in pursuit of the perfect wave. And it shows this big, beautiful bowl of ceviche.
Just the perfect wave of nausea.
This is amazing.
Oh, is it more, even more precious?
Oh, they got all kinds of raw everything. Yeah.
So, and like you said, the sad, the scary, you know, horrifying thing about this whole thing is that a lot of people eat raw scallops. And the fact that, you know, a lot of stuff can be killed if you cook it, except for hepatitis A.
Products stored at the following locations. Showa Cold Storage, 688 South Alameda Street, Los Angeles, California. So I'd say if you were going after that scallop risotto, yeah. Oh, this is funny.
Alameda?
Yeah, South Alameda Street, Los Angeles, California. Top price changes this week. White shrimp are down, tilapia is down, squids up, snow crab cluster is up, yellowfin tuna loin is down, no word on scallops. See, I'm at their home page, and there's not a God-blessed word on here
about,
oh, by the way, people are getting hepatitis from our scallops, please don't eat our scallops.
Or you might die.
Freshwater shrimp, product of Thailand. Oh, that was that stuff was produced with some oppression. Marinara mix, product of Thailand. Tilapia, product of China and Taiwan. Squid, product of Thailand. Green shell mussels, product of New Zealand.
Were these scallops from Hawaii or?
Yeah.
Okay. And Hawaii is a hell of a lot closer to me than New Zealand and Thailand last time I checked.
Yeah. Carol Baker, you're going to hell. I just got a note from Carol. Go brown. Not go green. Go brown.
Carol Baker.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Time out. I owe Carol a cowbell. Yeah. Go Brown gets a cowbell. I'm sorry. It just does. aren't you just so damn glad and proud you called the program tonight, Trace?
Well, you know, no, I am glad because see, I love scallops.
Well, I kind of am too. I mean, maybe it was like, okay, I'm getting a name. It begins with A. No, not A. B. No, not B. C. T for Tracy. Is it Tracy? Yes, it's Tracy. Tracy, don't eat the scallops.
And again, the horrifying thing is the fact that, like you said, this has been produced since November of last year. So
right.
If I happen to go to my local Trader Joe's, which I'm pretty sure says frozen scallops, you know.
No, that's the thing. They say it's, you know, it's not stuff you're going to buy in the market. It's just going to be served to you.
At a restaurant.
At a restaurant.
That's right.
You know, because because, I mean, you might screw it up, you know, if you was cooking it at home for yourself, but.
Scallops are tricky.
Yeah, well, they are. Building on Carol's Go Brown.
Oh, no.
We've started one. Marty says, Go Brown, what can Brown do for you? Probably get the cease and desist letter anytime now from UPS.
Well, it's just, you know.
What can Brown do for me? They could stop doing business with the Klan, but, you know, who am I?
You know, they could stop doing business with the Klan and, you know, try not to send this food that I can get hepatitis A. And then it makes me just. The cringe, this is one of those cringe-worthy moments when you think about a world where they don't want regulations. Where we live in a country where, you know, they build substandard housing or buildings and you get a one earthquake and the whole city comes down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by
the, you know.
Yeah, and by the way, we left something out, Tracy.
Oh.
Randy pointed it out. You know, we were talking about the people who probably work for Seaport being, you know, overworked, underpaid, you know, no time for bathroom breaks, yeah, yada yada yada. Randy points out, and then there's the overworked, underpaid, undocumented Hispanic short order cook in your local restaurant.
Yes.
Who's got a four tops, a six top. A two top that wants special handling and is just got to get it out. But the thing is, he generally or she does a pretty damn good job, and he can't do a mm-hmm. damn. There's no you can't cook, and this is important. You can't cook the fecally contaminated hepatitis A out of the scallops. It's
nope.
Not like E. coli, where if you've got it up to 200 degrees, you're pretty good, pretty, you know, you feel like you're on pretty solid ground.
Right. I mean, how long did we go without eating spinach for a while there, Bob?
Well, yeah, and there it was, fecal contamination again. By the way, our buddy Cindy in the Great Northwest says, look at Google Earth. Everywhere you see green on the coasts of the globe, there's excrement in the water. I don't eat seafood at all.
Oh,
I don't think I do anymore either.
So much of my gumbo party in January.
No. We're going to make sure you got the sausage for it.
You know, again, we...
And I mean, let's face it, you know what shrimp eat in the wild.
Yeah, well, we know that. Like, well, we know what catfish eats. But damn it, it's good eating. And lobster.
Right, I mean, there's a reason that, like, the dietary laws say, sorry, no lobster for you. Oh, Tracy,
yeah,
I'm sorry, I didn't
I'm
mean to do this to you.
I don't give a damn. But again, when I hear people, you know, the uninformed and the not even ill-informed, but not don't want to be informed. How about that? They don't want to be informed.
Yes.
And when they start screaming about, you know, leaving these damn regulators, this and that, let somebody, you know, especially like, let's go back to Louisiana.
Do less.
And all those, you know, oil rigs and all that. And we don't need regulations. They suck away jobs and blah, blah, blah. But then let somebody, you know, I don't know, one of them blow up. And because, you know, no regulations. Or very little regulation.
Self-regulation.
Yeah. And then, you know, because you don't have a union job and you get hurt. So?
Somebody else out there be happy to take your job.
Somebody, you know, like you said, these right-to-work states. Again, my mom and my brothers, you know, moved to the Confederacy. And like you said, it's still the Confederacy. I couldn't, when I hear what is, you know, it's beautiful to visit. I enjoy visiting the South and all that good stuff. I could not live there. Just because of how they treat their citizens. Not their residents, but their citizens. It's, you know, not to say that California is a far cry better, but we remember we had a couple of Republican governors, you know, Duke Machen and Pete Wilson and, you know, the governor. But I just can't. I just, you know, and listening to what you were talking about, how only $9 out of this government grant to blocks.
All over the South, it's that way.
$9?
$9 out of every 100, yes.
Out of every 100.
And even the Washington Post in its editorial acknowledged that the states play fast and loose.
Fast, and that's just a nice way of saying corruption. And what you said, hateful. Just when you just set out to make sure that a certain group of people have nothing just because they don't look like you, they don't worship like you, they don't speak like you do, or whatever the case may be, and these kids are starving. I mean, I think back on my life when I was on, you know, TANF, and like you said, all the hoops that you have to jump through, in my case, in California, I think I was going to probably get beat with me and Alex, maybe, at the time, maybe $300 a month for food stamps. Because in California, isn't that much, but it's better than $108. But like you said, it's be easier for me to go out on the stroll, Bob.
Yeah.
I make a hell of a lot more money, and I can make my own hours. How about that?
Yeah. But the thing is, like with the welfare reform, the era of big government is over. I just love saying that. I love it. I love it when millionaires say that. The problem is that, you know, that all these attempts at unbiased reporting, all these fair and balanced stories say, you know, in some places it's worked. It's helped people to go and get jobs.
Where are the jobs, Bob?
Well, okay, so that's where I was going, Tracy. Maybe if you live in a humane state that has a meaningful job training, job placement, job searching, job recruiting program, maybe it did. But that ain't Louisiana, and that damn sure ain't Alabama, and it's not Georgia, and it's not South Carolina, Stan. It ain't Tennessee, it ain't Kentucky, okay? So, it's kind of a bullshit claim, because you know what? West Virginia, where I am, Tracy, everywhere I go, convenience stores and fast food joints have signs in the window that say "Help Wanted." Okay. But I found out a little bit of ugliness about that, too. They always have a sign in the window saying "Help Wanted," even when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good for their image. But even if they do want help, you're not going to get a 40-hour-a-week job.
You're not.
Because these bastards are hell and be damned determined that you are not going to have health care. Okay? Because Obamacare might kick in if you were getting 40 hours a week, and then, well, where would they be? So that means you work less than full time for a minimum wage that is not even remotely resemblant to a life.
Well, like you said earlier about, you know, this government program that, you know, this law, this welfare reform 20-year anniversary, same amount of money that they were giving out 20 years ago.
There's that, too. And so, by the way, the dollar has not remained static in that time. It is worth less 20 years on than it was in 1996. In the middle of what we were constantly told was the greatest post-war expansion of the economy in the history of the United States. Hey, remember what we did last time? Last time you called, Tracy?
What did we do?
I think it's going to happen again because I think I got Todd.
That was so awesome.
Todd, are you there? Todd. No.
Oh, come on, Todd.
I tried to join Todd to the call, but it wouldn't join. Damn it.
Damn it. Hopefully he'll try again. I look at, you know, because, it, you know, everybody, I'm a Christian, and I'm constantly having these "what would Jesus do" moments. And,
well, with Bill Clinton's welfare reform, Jesus would have a plum fit.
Oh, he. This is when my head starts to explode about Christians. This, you know, this "do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And somewhere along the way, I guess everybody wants to get screwed over. It's just like, why do people sit? I mean, they sit back. It reminds me of "It's a Wonderful Life." What's his name? Barrymore, the guy that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Thank you. And it's like they sit back and they're licking their chops and they're rubbing their hands together, you know, Snidely Whiplash style.
Oh, but Tracy, they're so close now. They can smell it. They can taste it. I mean, it's like when you're getting close to the carnival, and you can smell the cotton candy, and you can smell the candied apples and the funnel cakes. Man, the libertarians and the Ayn Randians are so close. If Paul Ryan can just have his dreams come true, it'll be better than sex.
It'll be, yeah. But they don't even have to pay for it.
Bingo.
Okay.
Let me see if I can make this work. Are you there this time, Todd?
Can you hear me?
I hear you. Do you hear me?
Tracy, yes. Tracy, I forgot to wish you happy birthday last time we talked. I'm so sorry.
Oh, honey. Baby, I am well entrenched. I've been 50 years old for a month now.
you know what? It's about me. I feel better now. It's my karma.
No, I'm glad. Anything that I can help you make you feel good, baby, let me know. Because I do my best. And I'm being serious about this. I try, especially as my craziness and my own, you know, anxiety, because the honest to goodness truth is, for the last few days, I have been feeling so horribly anxious.
Well,
you know, and it's just like, it's just this, I hate that feeling of dread. And I, you know, that bone crushing, just, you can't breathe. You feel so overwhelmed sometimes. And I hate that way. I don't like feeling that way, because that's not how I work, and that's not what my faith says I'm supposed to do. Because I've been to hell and back, and, you know, and sometimes I go back just because I forgot how horrible it was before, thinking that it might change. But I need to, you know, I do my best not to contribute to anybody else's sorrow and their misery, because, you know, like, it's the misery loves company, and that's the company I don't want, and that's the company I don't want to keep.
Sounds like a good policy to me. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're golden.
I can hear you great. You're golden, and I'm on a Bluetooth, so if I can hear you, then hell.
Okay. Well, look, I have to jump on the negative bandwagon about the seafood. I hate to tell you. But at least we're of the age where we had it when it was okay. All right? I'm just saying, read your packages, right? And I was lovely to hear you talk about Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's is the shit.
It's more scallops.
Is it not? But I'm just, look, they have $3 bottles of Merlot. I mean, it's not, I mean, this Merlot they have is as good as most Merlot you spend $10 on the bottle for. I mean, it's called a $3 Chuck.
Well, it used to be two buck Chuck.
It used to be. But stay away from the white wine. Any cheap white wine, remember, stay away from it.
This is the torment the hillbilly who doesn't have anything like this anywhere near him portion of the program, isn't it? I'm sorry, I didn't realize that.
Look, we're not trying to leave you out, man. I know you have to go where I have to go for my, well, I don't even buy it, but where I see people get the fat of back, and they have a whole wall of the fat of back. It's disgusting. But, you know, I'm just saying, that's a 60-mile...
I'm okay. I'm just kidding. This doesn't even begin to touch Friday night's bird poop conversation. So, you know, there's a new benchmark in town.
Bird poop? What?
Don't.
But Trey,
okay,
I was listening, and I lost it when Bob said you cannot cook out the hepatitis. Hepatitis is serious, man. You start messing up with your kidneys and your liver, and you can't cook it out. You cannot eat it out. That's very disturbing. That's terrible.
Let's go into do we have a conspiracy corner?
Come on, Tracy. We've got a whole department.
All right.
Okay.
Let's talk about
capitalism, and, you know, you just said hepatitis A is huge, and let's think about Big Pharma, because we actually have commercials now about this new drug that helps with if you have hepatitis.
I know. Well, I had to get it off my chest. I'm done with it now. I had to get it off my chest. I'm done with it. All right. So let's move on. Let's move on to more credible topics here. Now look. What the hell? I'm telling you, we have to be very cognizant of what's going on. All right, we have to talk with people, because this election coming up is very dangerous.
You know, I agree.
There's folks out there who will not admit they're going to vote for the. They don't even know what a fascist is, but they're going to vote for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
See.
Because we have a horrible school system that doesn't, because, you know, we don't teach history the way it's supposed to be taught. So, of course, they don't know what a fascist is. And of course they don't realize how dangerous Donald Trump is. Because, you know, he's one of the guys. I can have a beer with him.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, and I would love to talk about food all night. And Bob, this is for you. Yeah, I made three more quiches. And you know what? I made an extra one for my neighbor because she gave me the look. So I had to...
Yeah, but so you mean this time you didn't look at her? No, there ain't any more. There's no more.
Well, no, what I do now, I mean, come on, I have to heat the oven up, right? So that's a lot of energy. So, you know, you're supposed to make two at once anyway. So I just make an extra one. And she's a nice lady. You know, she's wonderful. And, you know, I look out for her house and everything when she goes out of town. So it's okay. But these are treacherous times, people. We have to wake up. I hate to say this guy's name. What was that?
That was me almost getting taken out by a very old Lincoln Town car, but I'm good.
That's the international sound of that's not good. Anyway.
Well, that's how we know that Tracy is a lady cab driver in Los Angeles and not New York. Because if she was a lady cab driver in New York, that would have been followed by, hey, fuck you, buddy! Right?
Actually, I seen that earlier today. I was turning. I had to take Jan to the hospital. I mean, not that, but she went. We went to, she had her
follow-up?
Bandage removed today.
Oh.
Yes. And she's doing well.
Well, I was getting around to that, so I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, she's doing very well. We didn't see her doctor. We saw the physician assistant. But she's very pleased with her progress. And the bandage came off and the staples came out as well.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, she's doing really
good. I'm glad somebody's having a positive outcome out there.
Yeah, and I'm glad that somebody... Yeah, and the other reason why I will live in California, because I heard part of this story about, you know, I heard up until they figured out, okay, you went to the doctor Sunday to get your blood test, and they're like, you know, which way did they go? Which way did they go? And you went back today, and then I didn't hear in between. The next thing I heard was, I'm glad I asked questions because I could have died. And I'm like, holy God, what? I'm just like, what did I miss that, you know, you could have died? And I'm terrified to even think what, you know, went horribly wrong.
No, they just missed a drug interaction and could have burnt my kidneys up, giving me a CT scan with contrast. That's all I'm missing. Not that big deal.
Kidneys. You got two, Bob. Yeah. What's the problem?
Yeah, well, the problem is it burned both of them up.
I don't understand
what your issue is. You got to. But, you know. So, yes, you know, that's another reason not to leave California. Not that, you know, Kaiser is all that great. But
yeah, I've been watching the bruising. I've been watching the bruising move down my arm from where they tried to finagle some blood out of me, too, on both sides. And yeah, it's going to be sore for a while.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those people that it takes... Butterfly, I can't because I have very small veins. Big girl, small veins, go figure. And it's very difficult for them to draw blood for me. I had to actually get a butterfly needle. And and people think, I love it when I go somewhere different and they try to draw blood. And I'm like, put the grown-up needle away. Please get the kitty needle out. And I said, I'm like, look. I'm 50, not to say if they try it, I'm 50 freaking years old. I think I know my body well enough to know the big needle is not going to work. Todd, you've been trying to say something, and I'm sorry.
I when I first started calling, and I would listen to when I would call in, but it sounds so weird. I don't do that anymore because it just freaks me out. I don't like it. But anyway, I was just, I don't know if you listen to the filibuster, but you see, Well, obviously you did, I guess. Bob, you know, we have to, in other words, I'm going to boil this down really quickly. We have to be our own best advocate. When you go to the doctor, any doctor, you have to bring your pebble, like the old-timey composition book, because pages cannot be ripped out. You take a diary, you let them see the doctor write down what's going on, and you write down exactly what's going on, because that shit, they have buffoonery going on in doctors' offices now, you know. And you have to be able to call these people.
Yeah, but why, Todd? Why? Once again, okay, like you said with the seafood, at least we remember what it was like when it was good.
Because that's the way the shit is. Shit is fucked up. That's why.
I got that part, Todd. But why?
I had to get that out. I'm sorry. I have to get things out. I don't keep anything in.
I dig. But I mean, the question is, why and when?
Okay.
I mean, I don't think this is now. Granted, when I go down to my clinic, it's not unusual to hear people, "God damn Obama, and that Obamacare ruined everything for us." That's not unusual.
Oh, that kills me when I hear it.
But I don't think that's actually it.
Well,
because it sucked. It sucked before then.
It is, exactly. Let's go to the root and let's work back up. The root is that whoever put the NOMRCA on, whoever gave the NOMRCA to single payer. See, nobody understands what that means. That's a bullshit term. Fuck that. Everybody say fuck that. Single payer means nothing. It should be universal health care. That should be the term. Everybody needs to collectively get around that term. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, that's just me. But see, single payer is like, what is that? I don't know what that means. See, universal health care.
Right. Because we could have everybody's health care in the country paid for a profit by Aetna, and that would be single payer.
That's what the fuck I'm saying. See how simple that is? See, everybody can, you can be a damn crackhead on the street. Oh, universal health care. Oh, that means I'm covered. I know what the universe is. You know what I mean? Come on.
So how do we actually define it? Universal, publicly funded, full access, single payer health care.
Well, I'll tell you, the first place to start is everyone who has a smartphone. You go to congress.com and they have a nice map on there, and you can hit your state and it will pull up who your representative is, even if you don't know. And beyond that, with the folks who don't have a phone, you know, you can recruit them. But you see, terminology means a lot. Look at what the GOP has done with terminology. They have learned how to make the most egregious, disgusting things, and they put a spin on it, and it sounds good. It's like, oh, you know, that sounds, I'm a little excited now. I can't come up with a concrete example, but you know exactly what I'm talking about.
No, I do. And see, I left one part out, the part where I sat there for 20 minutes while the one lady who understood billing explained how we had to go in and change the code, but no, we don't have to change the code because this was pre-certed. It wasn't pre-certed. It didn't require certification, so we're cool. But if it had required pre-certification, it would have been a whole different mess, and we probably would have had to just reschedule.
Yeah,
that ain't medicine.
Yeah.
That ain't medicine, Todd. That's bureaucracy, okay?
What exactly? See, but that's what I'm, you know, and you know what? The same thing with medical care is about our educational system. And that was the first time I ever called you. I was talking about education because part of my job, you know, for 10 years, they sent me all around the country, right? I was doing data collection and you know, going into classrooms all over this country, okay? So what I'm saying is that we have to, you know, it's okay to standardize some things. You know, other things, fine. I'm not anti-capitalist, but I'm just saying there has to be reason. You have to have controls. There has to be reason. Like, this is bullshit. like what you went through today. That's bullshit. That's some fucked up shit. Like the average motherfucker would be like, okay, whatever, because you're a doctor and I'm not. And I've only been, I only graduated, 12th grade, and I tried to get a job at the plant, and they wouldn't hire me, so now I'm mowing lawns and blah, blah, blah. They don't know shit. They don't know anything about, the sodium potassium pump. They don't know anything about mitochondria. They don't know shit, And you got to question. My point is that when you start questioning, when you get medical care, once you start questioning, it makes a difference. And I only know this because I take a lot of old people to the doctor.
And they're at the mercy of their provider at that point.
Well, exactly.
Especially when they don't have anybody to advocate for them.
Right, Tracy.
They treat you differently when you know what you, when you even act like you know what you're talking about, because they're like, oh, this person knows what you're talking about. Okay. And I'm telling you, where I live in South Carolina, remember, this is a state-legislated, minimally adequate educational area.
Nightmare.
You see what I'm saying? And remember, and I had a friend, and she met one of these little girls, young ladies who behind the desk, and she quit because she would hear them talk about black people when they come in, or poor people, And it's a mess. So we have to be our, in other words, I'm boiling it down. When you go to medical care, you have to be your own best advocate. The best thing to do your research before you go in there and shock the doctor. Say, oh, and the doctor will look at you differently.
Well, I look at my mom moved to North Carolina. Unfortunately for my mom, not only did she, was she born and raised out here, but she's an RN. So she knows, And, when you were talking about how you go to doctor's offices and how they talk about black people, and one of the things she's noticed since she's moved down south is how they do treat black people or not treat black people. And
she didn't move there thinking everything had changed, did she?
No. No, not even. She's like, the one thing, good thing about the South is, as a black person, she actually, people have to have to talk with her about, where you can and cannot go because, you're black, so don't go there. And at first she's like, what? Seriously? We're from California. I mean, we have those neighborhoods where, they don't like it when we're there, but the chances of you getting killed, the chances of you getting killed, they're minimal. That you will make it out of those neighborhoods alive. Chances are that's not going to happen. Let me just say, from the people who live there, not at LAPD, because I think I've told you stories on how my son didn't tell me about this until, years later, or how he would be walking home from work in his uniform at night in Sherman Oaks and had been accosted on more than one occasion by LAPD. Because he's
Sherman Oaks.
Sherman Oaks.
Wait a minute, Sherman Oaks is an affluent area, as far as I understand.
It is. It's it's not like Bel Air, Beverly Hills. We lived in, I call it Sherman Oaks, Lower Sherman Oaks, but it was still Sherman Oaks nonetheless. But young black kid walking down the street at night, of course he's doing something wrong, even though he's in his work uniform. The job, the local yogurt shop. So it's those things where you better know your place. So whether it don't let the sun hit you where the good Lord, whether it don't let the sun go down on your ass or whatever, those sundowner towns. We don't have those, really, but well, we do. But yeah, my mom had to, and so when she comes here to visit, she goes to my doctor. She actually flew out here years back to have her shoulder surgery because she knew what would happen in North Carolina.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, Tracy. You see where Mr. Kincaid lives. You see, they understand that he's a captive audience because there's not a whole lot. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's It's really not. And I would imagine that the folks there, they probably, I mean, unless you get somebody who's exceptional, they probably treat the people like that because they know where the hell, where are you going to go? They're going to look at you like, well, where are you going to go?
You know, like you said, you know, it's like when you go to the neighborhoods out here. Cause I'm
yeah, you pretty much got it. I mean, I go where there is. There's a hospital in Oak Hill. There's one in Beckley. 50 miles away in Charleston, there's another couple or four. And then there's my little one over here 20 minutes away.
And see, and that's the tragedy. That's why we need to, first of all, the thing we need to do right now, everybody who's cognizant, who's conscious, we need to change the damn moniker from single payer. We need to make it something that everyone can recognize, universal health care. Because at the end of the day, we're all paying for it. We're all going to pay for it, right? But we all need good, we don't live in a bubble. We do not live in a bubble. And I will never forget when I was doing catering one time as a temp worker, and I was I had to serve Joe Wilson. You lie. That Joe Wilson. I served him. None of the women, nobody. It was mostly women that were doing it. Nobody was serving, right? Dude was scared. He wouldn't even eat his salad because
Todd, I got to interrupt for just a minute because you mentioned Joe, whose name is not really named Joe Wilson, the You Lie guy. You know he has a credible Democratic challenger for a change this time.
I do not. I have not been following him.
And not only does he have a credible Democratic challenger, he has a credible Democratic challenger in the general election who is a dear friend of this program and who I know for a fact has a really, really big, smart brain. And his name is Eric Bjorn. He's been on this program a number of times. Prolific writer, and
wow.
God, it would be a beautiful thing if he could unseat him. And he's actually getting some pretty damn good press, too. So that's encouraging.
Now,
that's South Carolina.
Who are we talking about?
Eric Bjorn.
A senator?
No, running for House of Representatives in South Carolina.
Ah.
As good a progressive as you can hope ever to meet. And he has, he has busted his ass, and fought for the nomination against a fake Democrat, won it, and just might upset the apple cart. Who knows?
Well, I'm
especially if South Carolina decides to walk away from Trump.
Your governor said that he can't support Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, right. That's because, here, though. And the funny thing is, down there in South Carolina, Stan, Nimrata Haley, the governor down there, she cannot stand Donald Trump.
No, she does not.
Mm-hmm. So it...
Well... Hey, you guys, listen, I remember, I will never forget this. Maybe I told it before, but it's only going to take a second. When they pulled that nasty flag down from the State House, they showed it one time. I watched it live, I watched this thing live when they pulled it down. There was this young white girl, well, she appeared to be white, I'll say this, and she said she was from North Carolina, and when they pulled the flag down, her face was red. She was crying, and they interviewed her as it was coming down, and she said, "Oh, it feels like I'm losing a part of my family." So, the term that Bob coined years ago, the Cold Civil War. You know, this is where we are, and it's not relegated to the South. Really not.
But again, that goes back to our bullshit educational system. If we actually, if there was such a thing as the teaching of the real history of this country, And what is it? Oh, why can't I think of the man's name? The People's History of the United States. What is that man's name? Oh, God. He wrote that book.
Howard Zinn.
The People's History.
Howard Zinn.
Thank you. I knew it was a Z. If that was required reading, and conversations were to be had as a result of that reading. See, again, even though I grew up here and grew up in California and stuff, I knew slavery was bad, but I didn't realize just how bad it was until I went back to college in my 30s and my 40s. And I'm Black.
Tracy, so if I'm watching,
you know, Gone with the Wind and The Little Foxes and all these movies with the happy Negro, well, why would anybody think slavery was terrible? It's like, apparently, you know, Snoop Dogg got his panties in a bunch when they redid Roots. And he's like, I'm so tired of these, why are we always making movies about slavery and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, because nobody has gotten the truth about it. When you have states like Texas, you know, basically saying that slavery was all that bad, y'all, don't worry about it. And that, you know, it had no bearing on the history of this country. Then, you know, of course people are having a hissy fit about the Confederate flag because they don't really know what it represents. Or they do know. Or they really don't. Because some people do know, but they don't really get it. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean,
they don't get it. You know what? They don't get it. You know what? We need more community barbecue. And you know, I remember the first time I saw Bob, right? I remember I had just moved down to Michigan. It was like the season had just changed. And we were talking about school, and see, schools make a big difference. I don't understand why you bring these kids up and they're under the illusion like everybody has the same chance, and it's really not, because schools don't need to be funded by property taxes. If we wanted to be serious about our education, there would be a large pool of money for school, period. And then they do a projection, how many children do you think are going to be in your area, blah, blah, blah. And then that's how you build school. That's how you allocate teachers. Because the way we're doing it now is awful. And I hope Carol Baker is listening, because I often see the St. Louis paper, the Dispatch, and they got a guy named Tony Messenger, and he did a nice story on lead poisoning in the school. And it made me think. I remember in Philly, right, when they started shutting down the water fountain, because like the elementary school I went to was still there. It was built in the 1880s. It's still there because made out of granite. You know, that school's not going. It will cost millions of dollars to knock that school down. They can't knock it down. And it's, you know, it's in a nice neighborhood. But anyway, they shut the water fountains down. And we're like, why can't we get any water? They're like, well, lead. And I remember this was back in the 70s. So this is not a problem. But in St. Louis, these kids have been drinking this lead water in their schools for years. And then you wonder why they have, maybe some of these people have aberrant behavior or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but it just adds to it. Because you cannot get lead out. And I don't even know how I got off on that tangent. But it means something. I mean, we have to be careful what we have to be cognizant and protest, you know, and the fact that folks don't understand why people are angry is
a no. Take that lead issue just right there, all by itself, for a minute. If you, as an elected official, a school board member, a member of Congress, a senator, a mayor, an alderman, what have you, if you know you have lead in the water inside your schools, Todd, you don't ever get to say a damned word about caring about educating our children. You just don't.
Exactly.
Because it's pretty clear you don't. And I don't mean you, of course, but you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Well, it's those things that they talk about how, you know, as important as this presidential election is and whatnot and so forth, it's the local elections that are the ones you have, you know, these people running for, like you said, mayor and alderman and city council and school board. The school board. Because it's the school board that decides what textbooks go into and what's, you know, about prayer in schools and that, you know, teaching, what is that bullshit, abstinence. And, you know, and all this stuff.
I just want you to know that was so beautifully said. What is this bullshit abstinence? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, come on. I'm the product of a teenage pregnancy, for God's sake. Abstinence don't work. Not in high school.
No, because she was saying no all the way to the delivery room.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say my parents did get married, but great. My father, you know, used to use my mother as a punching bag because, you know, what difference does it make? You know, it's like, come on.
This is what we're dealing with because there is the hidden, and I've been saying this for months. People are embarrassed, right? There's a lot of folks who are embarrassed to say that they're going to vote for the fascist dude, and they don't even know what the fascist. I call him the fascist. I don't want to say his name that much, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure.
So, and this is his theme song. 5-1, baby, 1-5. No one here gets out alive now. That's all I got to say. And if you know who I'm talking about, think about the rest.
Yep.
And who is Bob? Well, you know who that is, right?
Yep.
Who is that?
Who's that?
Wait a minute.
5-1, baby, 1-5.
Jim Morrison.
There you go. Think about the lyrics of that. That's Jim Mark. That is fucking Donald Trump, man. He's like, I got mine, you get yours. Fuck you.
Yep. Igum foo. By the way, a couple of comments.
You can't get yours if there ain't nothing to get.
Well, there's that. but that ain't their fault. Just because they've got it all and want more. Yeah. I want to back up a couple of concepts, whatever, because I want to go back to Eric Bjorn for a moment. Is Joe Wilson your congressman, Todd?
I'm sorry, but...
Is Joe Wilson your congressman?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, even so, you might want to try to see what you can do to help out. And I wanted to make sure I gave everybody his website, because it's awfully damn clever. Bjorn,
yeah.
Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N, you know, really good Viking name. Bjorn, the numeral 2, run, RUN.com. Bjorn2run.com. I get it. Yeah?
Awesome.
Is that beautiful?
But the thing is...
Oh, I like that.
What's so horrifying and scary, though, Bob, is that how much of that, how is that wasted on the contingency that makes up South Carolina?
Well, I don't think Eric would be running if he thought it was an entirely wasted effort.
No. What I'm saying is born to run, if they're going to even pronounce his name correctly.
Oh, Bjorn. No. They'll learn. At South Carolina, they'll just probably call him Bjorn.
That's what I said.
You mean Bjorn, like the tennis player when I was a kid, when we were kids, we're the same age mostly.
Yeah, like Bjorn, yeah. Like Bjorn Borg?
Right.
Yeah, yes. Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. Yeah.
Right.
The second congressional district of South Carolina is made up of Aiken, Barnwell, Lexington, Orangeburg, and Richland counties.
Okay, yeah, that's the next one over. Right.
Mm-hmm. And he needs all the good good progressive help he can get. So, you know, maybe it might even be worth a worth reaching out to him, Todd. Just say, you know, I'll help you however I can.
You know, we have to let people. I'm all about. See, I'm all. You know, my background is psychology, and I'm all about like positive reinforcement works better. And, I mean, this is just global. When I say global, you know, global doesn't mean all around the world. But anytime you interact with somebody, anything you do positive, it's better than being negative. In other words, people always complain. When you go to the grocery store, when you go to the supermarket, when you're getting gas, when you whatever. If somebody's nice, say, thank you for being so nice. You know, that means a lot to people.
You know what, I had that happen to me today because my wife is not, you know, one of the nicer people in the world. And so we're sitting, you know, after we went to the doctors, we were waiting for, the valet at Kaiser. Shut up. And there was this older gentleman. And sitting next to us, he said he was 79, 80 years old, something like that. He walks over and, you know, Jan, who has the patience of a, you know, whatever, he starts to have a conversation. And I thank God he sat on my side and not next to Jan. He sat next to me. And he starts talking about, you know, how he used to be a teacher and at Jefferson High School. I'm like, wow, what year? Because my grandparents, went to Jefferson High School. And he's like, really? And he told me what, yeah. I said, no, they were lost. So they went to the Jefferson High School back in the mid to late 40s. And then he was talking about how he moved to another and went to a school called Virginia Road. And I'm like, oh, over, you know, off of Crenshaw between Jefferson's and Adams. And he's like, I said, you know, and we talked about the streets that used to be, you know, but it's just the fact that I took the time to have a conversation with the man. You know, and I know it made his day because people don't talk to older people. And I love talking to older people, especially older black people, because I love history. And I'm devastated that I had, you know, great grandparents and great great grandparents alive when I was an adult. But I didn't talk, well, I didn't know enough about, you know, the Great Migration and all that to even ask them questions. Because their lives were so horrific in the South that they didn't even talk about it. So that's a history that I'll never know about on my family's side because, you know, they didn't talk about it because of, you know, the conditions. So, you know, I like talking to older people because I get a sense of history. And it's just, you know, but that, you know, you said just to take the time to be nice. Those moments like when I'm letting, you know, even though I'm probably one of the most aggressive drivers in Los Angeles, I have to be, because if you drive scared in L.A., you'll never get anywhere. But on those rare occasions that I'm not rushing or what have you, when somebody signals and I let them over. You know, that little moment of kindness.
I call those grace notes. I call those grace notes.
Yes, that grace notes when you're, you know, like the other day, this lady was giving out cheese samples, and this guy was so rude to her. And I was nice, you know, and she's like, thank you. You know, because you just took the time to listen to my spiel. You know, it's just, when we take ourselves out of the equation, when we start thinking about, well, how would you want somebody to talk to you? Or better yet, how would you want somebody to treat your grandparents if you're still poor? I have no grandparents. You know, I have no grandparents. And my mom, my father's dead. My mom is, you know, fine. But I envy people with grandparents, you know, especially people with grandparents that are my age and older. I envy them because it's like, you know, that's something that, you know, that's a precious resource. And
that's
just
hard
like
to
I
do.
Said, if you just, huh?
You said what I said when you said it. That's hard to, that doesn't just happen. That's a difficulty. In other words, at a certain age, when you have grandparents, at a certain age, that's a big deal.
You know, and I think about basically, you know, how this country, the way, when I, you know, like you were saying, how dangerous this election is. And I think about, you know, the older people and, like, the special, you know, the kids that I drive, special needs kids, and the programs that will be no more. If, you know, it's going to be hard enough to keep them if Hillary gets into office. And just to think what it'll be like if Trump becomes president. So, you know, I understand how I can't stand Hillary and all this. I get that. I get people's, I don't like the woman. As a matter of fact, I think right after, you know, right before the convention or whatever, or sometime after when it was known that she was the presumptive, you know, Democratic candidate for president, I get a phone call. About, you know, from a Hillary supporter wanting me to come and make phone calls for Hillary. And I said, no. I said, well, are you going to support Hillary? I'm like, yes. And so, of course, they did the whole show. Oh, thank you. And can we count on? I said, look, I will be voting for Hillary. And that is the sum total of my support. She is getting my very precious vote, but I will not be putting out any yard signs for her. I will not be putting any bumper stickers on my car for her. I will not be contributing to her campaign because I do not support her in that way. The only reason why I am voting for her is so Donald Trump does not become the president.
Right. It's a defensive. We had to play defense. In other words, this is not, you know, about.
It's not about. I don't know. I am in no way, shape, form, or fashion in support of Hillary Rodham Clinton. I am not with her. But
no, who is? But we are once again forced into this false choice. Right? In other words, this is not what we want. But are we gonna, I mean, the person, the other only, and I'm telling you, this shit is looking fucking ugly. And I say this because he will win the electoral vote, right? But there's a very good chance that he's going to win the popular vote. And we're going to be in a conundrum. This shit is going to be fucked up.
Well, I do not believe in counting any unhatched chickens. And I don't think that you can safely say that it's in the bag. I think that is a sure road to defeat, especially before we even get to Labor Day.
We're still in the dog days of summer in August. You know, we still
right.
basically have
say,
two and
Bob?
A half months to go with this craziness.
Listen, Bob. The people who like Trump, the facts don't matter to them.
No.
All right.
That's 40% of the electorate, isn't it?
Nothing he does matters to them, except that he provides confirmation bias to their bigotries, their racism, their hate, their phobias, their fears, etc. Well, I read that article you sent earlier today, and it was horrifying.
What article?
Yeah, the black people in Philadelphia who say they're voting for Trump.
That voting for Hillary because, you know, she's Hillary. Why?
Tracy, and this is what's frightening. Now, if this is a barometer, you understand, Philadelphia is a Democratic stronghold. Period.
Look, but it's not just a Philadelphia thing. You got gay people out there who are voting for Trump, okay? And they'll own it. Now, how do you do that? He's the nominee of the Republican Party, which says that they've got members who say that they want you in a concentration camp if you're gay. Okay?
Or, you know, people with special needs children who are voting for Trump when they watch him make fun of a reporter with a disability.
So that's what I'm saying. These are perilous times. In other words, we don't know what is going. Everything is topsy turvy. All right. The woman. Look, and Bob asked me one time. I mean, it'd be great. You know, I'm gonna answer you now. No, I don't vote for somebody just because it's a woman, just because it's black. You didn't say that one time. No. You got to have the best person for the job. It would be great if you could fill out some positions and make things equal, whatever, whatever. But at the end of the day, we have to serve everybody, all right? And that's the truth. We have to serve everybody. But we don't want no dickheads. There are women dickheads, and there's men dickheads. And dickheads are dickheads. You're either a fucking dickhead or
you're not. Yeah, see, I mean, I opt for asshole at that point.
Yeah, asshole.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
I'm redacting. I'm redacting. I'm a girl. Right. Dickhead? Nah, I'm good.
Because you can go there without without any gender reference whatsoever.
Nope.
But I understand. There's a bunch of stuff on the line, as you note. Here's one I saw just before airtime, courtesy of Reuters. Headline, Judge grants nationwide injunction to halt Obama's transgender bathroom policy.
Uh-huh.
A U.S. judge blocked Obama administration guidance that transgender public school students must be allowed to use bathrooms of their choice, granting a nationwide injunction sought by a group of 13 states led by Texas. Naturally, this case arose out of the Northern District of Texas by the Right Honorable Reed O'Connor. Man, it doesn't take long to figure out who appointed that dumbass. And the thing is, it'll have to. Hi, my name is Reed O'Connor. That's got Bush appointee written all over it. Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, it'll have to go up in order to get struck down because that judge does not have the jurisdiction, I don't think, to strike down something that is only a guideline in the first place. And yes, the other, naturally, the usual suspects, the other states that sued were Talabama, Wisconsin, West Virginia stan, Tennessee stan, Arizona stan, Maine stan, Oklahoma stan, Louisiana stan, Utah stan, Georgia
Maine?
Stan, Mississippi stan, and Kentucky stan.
Did you say Maine?
I said Maine.
Oh, you know what?
Because they've got that asshole Governor Paul LePage.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so.
It's so hard. You know what? It's so hard to keep, you know, it's like you have to have a scorecard. I need to keep one, you know, on my car to see, you know, the span states now. That's what you should do about. Because, you know, I think you ought to get a map of the United States and put, you know, the span states and put that on the Horn Facebook page. And the span states with their governors.
I lose track
and I think it'll be good for those who, you know, because it'll be good for those of like me who forget, because like I said, I have the attention span, you know, and sometimes I really feel like, you know, finding Dory. I had those moments and I'm like, wait, what was I thinking about? So I'm a visual learner. I kid you not on that. So yes, if you, and I'm not even kidding with that. I would love it. So I, you know, and you could say asshole governor or whatever, or anything that won't get you into too much trouble. You know, these are the states that we really need to be paying attention to. I mean, I'm good with the states.
And by the way,
you know,
I did
like
check it out. Judge Reed O'Connor. George W. Bush appointee, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
The guy probably has about as much understanding of law as I have of string theory. He's just another. He's just another. Just another right wing turd out there doing the GOP's bidding.
Oh my God! Listen, Hillary's political clout, the thread that makes her political rug, or her soul, or whatever you want to call it, right? That shit is withering by the day. This shit is fucked up.
Another 15,000 emails that they found there, Bob?
No, they've had them all along. They just announced that they were going to release them. They didn't just find them. The email thing remains a giant nothing burger.
It is not going away.
No, it's not going away because the for-profit media and the GOP keep it alive. But that doesn't change it from being a nothing burger.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you see the article about Clayton Joe and Mika?
Oh yeah, well, I mean they're having a bit of a tiff with T-Rump again. In fact, it just so happens I got a clip from him if you guys want to check it out.
Oh please.
I knew you.
You know what, Bob? You know why I said Clayton Joe, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
Oh please, play it. Please.
Okay. So we ready? Okay. Good.
I'm ready.
So here's the setup. They were talking about Trump finally behaving a little bit like a human being on the campaign trail. And so Morning Jerk and Mika, otherwise Mika referred to by Charlie Pierce as the meat puppet. They had a guy named Rick Tyler on to talk about it, and this is what happened.
Notice what Ryan's previous said there. I mean, he's sort of talked about his candidate as if he graduated from diapers to big boy pants. I mean, this is not really this is not great progress at all. His new tone, I don't understand what the new tone is. We were going to, you know, I don't want to pivot. I got to be honest with the American people, and yet we see this sort of pivot. Is this really who Donald Trump is? He just doesn't seem to have a core underlying governing philosophy, and so none of these issues and his positions on them, and particularly look at immigration, where he just reversed himself literally over the weekend. Right. And with Kellyanne Conway, can't say we won't have a task force to forcibly remove undocumented immigrants from the United States. When she can't even say that, you know, where does this candidate stand?
Okay, so we got that. All right. Well, Trumple Thin Skin heard that. That's Carol's. Do not credit me with that. That's Carol's.
Trumple Thin Skin.
Trumple Thin Skin. Yes. That's Carol's. Go ahead. Keep enjoying it. That's fine. I got time. So he then heard it.
I have to say, before we forget, I love me some Carol Baker. I know you're probably...
Listen, we are all founding members of the Carol Baker Appreciation Society. We just are.
I mean, because she's one of those people that I always envied because I don't have those quick retorts and I can't come up... You know, she's one of those people that could probably cut somebody down right at that moment.
Oh, it doesn't. No. You're in a heap on the floor in a million tiny pieces before you know you've been cut the first time. And I got to tell Tracy. I know you're probably friends. You got to go see her Barbie picture from earlier today. Her sister Barbie. This is Ballerina Swan Lake Mobile Home Country Club and Trailer Court Barbie. You're so going to love it. You are so going to love it. So here's how it plays out. You heard the clip. So then Trump, who says he never watches the program, immediately gets on Twitter because, you know, it's like it's like Alpo to a coyote. He can't resist, okay?
It's like catnip.
Tried watching Low Rated at Morning Joe this morning. Unwatchable. Morning Mika is off the wall, a neurotic and not very bright mess. But that wasn't enough, so he kept going. Someday, when things calm down, I'll tell the real story of At Joe NBC and his very insecure longtime girlfriend, At Morning Mika. Two clowns.
What?
So he's threatening them now. He's kind of Twitter blackmailing them. But because catnip goes in two directions, Joe responded, neurotic and not very bright. Look in the mirror. I'm rubber, but
really?
You're glue. Yeah, I'm rubber, but you're glue. What bounces off me sticks to you. But
are they 12?
Yeah, no, nine. 11 tops.
Seven.
So there's there's a thing I got to get. There's a thing I got to get the last thing in, Tracy. Because so I read this whole story over at Raw Story, and I'm reading the tweets, and I'm going yeah. So what? But then I get to Joe's tweet, and you know how on Twitter, you know, you got the little picture of yourself or, you know, a unicorn or whatever. Get this.
No. Okay.
Get the hockey pucks, everybody. Joe Scarborough's avatar on Twitter is Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch.
Shut the front door.
What? Fuck that shit.
No, I'm not lying.
Joe Scarborough thinks
he's Atticus Finch.
He's Atticus fucking Finch.
If you could see my face right now, you fucking would throw up. Oh my God.
Is it trying to go seven different directions at once, Todd?
Doesn't he realize who Atticus Finch was?
Oh yeah, and he thinks he was Atticus Finch. Yeah, oh yeah, he's Atticus out there fighting the rights for the rights of the downtrodden and you know, pushing back against the Yules and the Cunninghams. I guess that means Mika is Little Scout.
I have not watched those scoundrels since that first day when he went against, when he started talking trash against the guy he had been filleting for months or years, and someone had to pass him some tissues to wipe the, you know, crust around his mouth. And that was it. I was done. I mean.
Well, okay, but I got we're running out of time, and I got one last question though. If Joe Scarborough is Atticus Finch, does that mean Willie Geist is Boo Radley?
Oh.
Wow.
No, wait. I don't think Willie Geist has that well developed a sense of morals and ethics. Sorry, just had to. We're out of time, y'all. It's been a delightful conversation, though.
Oh, my head is still spinning. Oh God.
Yeah, hello.
Oh, Bob, is it too late to get the wild rice?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I'm going to keep that open for a couple more days. In fact, I wanted to send out a big thanks to Don, who became a brand new subscriber this evening, and thank Felicia for updating her subscription, and encourage others to do the same. And yes, the wild rice offer for the fall is on the table, and we got $190 in fundraising to go this evening, because $190.
Does that $60 go towards tonight's fundraising?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Oh yeah. But anyway, we got to get out of here, so Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. And I've got an essay that I want to share from our buddy Michael in Madison that I think you all will find quite interesting. It goes back to something we were talking about on Friday that was not bird poop. And so I'll be here. I hope you all will, too. Tracy, Todd, thank you so very, very much. Y'all have a lovely evening. It was, as I said, a delightful conversation. And thanks to all of you for participating. I even had a lovely note, and Eric Bjorn will be thrilled. I had a lovely note from our buddy Cindy. She said, I just gave your horn money to Bjorn. Get back with you in another week. I just gave to Eric Bjorn, and he will be tickled to hear it. So thanks all, each and every one of you, for making this little community what it is. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.